This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
For the Hidden Killers Podcast, I'm Stacey Cole. Corey Richens back in the spotlight, a Utah mother of three who published a children's book about grief after her husband's death, has been ordered to stand trial on charges of murder, attempted murder, and other crimes in relation to his death. Let's go now to the hearing.
Mr. Burmester, just checking in. Ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Nestor, ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's go back on the record. Mr. Burmester, the state's next witness.
The state's next witness, Your Honor, is Will Carrington.
Ms. Carrington, let's get you sworn in.
Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give the matter before the court to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, subject to the pains and penalties of perjury?
Deputy, can you get Ms. Carrington the glass of water? Thank you. Mr. Remister, take it away.
And to increase the likelihood of a disaster, is that the witness notebook? Because we're putting water next to a notebook.
That is the witness.
Okay. That's what I would do. Now, Ms. Carrington's a lot better than me.
Thank you very much.
Can you please state your full name and then spell your last name for the record?
Brooke Carrington, K-A-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N.
And are you employed?
Yes.
How?
I am a forensic accountant.
Do you work for a firm or have a firm?
I have a firm, KF Squared.
And how long have you practiced in this field?
Over 30 years.
Now, did you testify as an expert in this case at the detention hearing in June of last year?
Yes, I did.
What sort of documents did you review, if any, in preparation for today's testimony?
I reviewed financial documents that include bank account statements, real property documents that are recorded like trust deeds, warranty deeds, etc. I've also reviewed loan documents, which includes promissory notes, the applications, the documents that memorialize the terms, the loans. I've reviewed insurance documents, which are the applications and the policy documents. The There's also a large body of email communication associated with different loan applications and insurance applications.
Okay, so to be clear, that would be things like maybe someone submits an application and then there's some follow-up communication between a lender and a borrower?
That's correct.
What bank accounts did you look at? What banks or credit unions and things did you look at?
Primarily, there are a number of them, but primarily America First Credit Union, PenFed Credit Union, Navy Federal Credit Union, UCCU, which I believe is Utah Community Credit Union.
Okay, so let's look at the bank accounts from AFCU, from America First. Were there a number of those accounts associated with the defendant or family?
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about, were there some associated with their children?
Yes.
Okay. Leaving those to the side, see, that's why I don't have water next to me. Let's look at the adults. What accounts, and let's refer to them to the last four digits of those accounts. What ones did you look at?
Primarily, the K. Richens Realty account, which is 5677.
Are you sure it's 5677?
6577, sorry about that. They're joint, Eric and Mr. Richens and Ms. Richens had a joint account 2204. Ms. Richens had a personal account, which is 5244. And then the C&E Masonry account, which is 7664.
This 6577, the K. Richens Realty, did Eric Richens have access to that account that you can see?
Not that I'm aware of. He was not a signer. I don't see any transactions that indicate that he would have accessed that.
Can you generally conceptualize how 2204, that joint account, was used?
That appeared to be the account where typical household expenses were paid. The mortgage on the house, the credit card payments, the kids' expenses, insurance payments, various things associated with the family.
Purchases at the grocery store.
Things like that, yes.
Okay. Are you, through this work you've done for the county, and let me ask this question, were you originally hired by the estate or someone else before being hired by the county?
Yes, it was.
Who hired you?
I was brought into the case to work on behalf of the estate of Eric Richens. And so I worked on that case, but then when I was hired by Summit County, I ceased my engagement with her.
So in part of your work, did you ever become familiar with a premarital agreement?
Yes.
Okay, I'd like to refer your attention to docket number 106. Examine this document?
Yes, I did.
And what is it?
This is the premarital agreement between Mr. Richens and Ms. Richens.
And I'd like to further direct your attention to section 2 of that document.
Okay.
In section 2, is there something relevant to today's inquiry?
Yes. This section states that the business, C&E Masonry, would retain its character as separate property belonging to the husband.
even if funds were commingled?
That's correct.
Personal and professional? But was there an exception to that?
Yes, if the husband should die prior to the wife, then his interest would transfer to her.
So what was Kay Richens Realty?
That is Ms. Richens' business, primarily in the real estate business.
Did she have other businesses that you're aware of?
Yes, she did.
Do you know when that business was formed?
Yes.
When?
In April of 2019.
I'd like you to take a look at State's Exhibit 19, please. What is that?
This is the Certificate of Organization of Kay Richens Realty, LLC.
Does it indicate when the company was formed?
It does on yes, it does.
But what is the date?
April 26, 2019.
And does it also give an address for this business?
Yes, it does.
What is that address?
282 Willow Court in Camas, Utah.
Okay. Is that in Summit County? Did you rest of your home?
It is in Summit County, yes.
Just generally speaking, how does this type of business work? Ms. Richens was.
She appears to me that she was a licensed real estate agent, so she did sell buyers, represent buyers and sellers, but primarily she was involved in fixing and flipping homes.
So she would buy it, fix it, then sell it? Is that what we get?
That's correct, yes.
This began then in 2019?
That's right.
Were there other purchases or transactions 2019?
Yes.
And where did those take place?
Those were in South Carolina.
So the market in 2019, do you have any idea of what the market was like, real estate market was like in 2019?
Yes, it was robust.
Meaning properties could come up for sale and be gone within a matter of days?
I think that's a fair statement, yes.
And what were the interest rates like? Conventional loan interest rates then versus say
fairly low. They were still very, very low at that time.
Rough neighborhood average.
Well, depending on your loan, but 2 to 4 or 5%.
Safe to say that's a good one today.
Safe to say, yes.
So, in that business, it would seem to me that you would need to be able to act quickly to obtain properties before they're suddenly out of the market.
I think that's a fair statement, yes.
So, how do the practitioners of that this kind of business work? It would seem you'd need some capital somehow.
That's correct.
And what are the possible sources for capital?
A business in that field could have its own capital. It could borrow from financial institutions. They could borrow from friends or whatever, hard money lenders, or have investors.
Okay. So what do you mean by hard money lenders?
Hard money lenders are... Well, soft money lenders would be like traditional financial institutions where it's a conventional loan, there's a conventional loan application process, due diligence by that financial institution, or and they're typically regulated by state and federal agencies. And then hard money loans are called that colloquially because they have more strict terms, the harder terms, usually a higher interest rate, very definite zero tolerance default clause usually.
Okay, so I guess the advantage of a conventional loan would be lower interest rate. The disadvantage would be response time because of the due diligence required.
So that would be, yes.
The others are more responsive in time, but have these more draconian clauses.
Yes.
Prior to the April 26, 2019 date, was there something else that you found that was important for our inquiry today?
Yes.
What was that?
The home equity line of credit that was taken out on the home.
On the family home, the marital home.
The home on Willow Court, where the family lived, yes.
Do you know whose name that the first one? Was there a mortgage on that home?
Yes.
Do you know whose name was on that mortgage?
The home was owned by Eric Richens, and the home equity loan that was taken out was also in the name of Eric Richens.
Could you give us a very brief description of what a home equity loan is?
It's a line of credit, typically, that is established. There's a loan application process. There's a line of credit that's established that someone could tap into their equity that they already own.
So you could make home improvements or whatever you wanted to do, I suppose.
A person could tap into it for any number of reasons.
In this case, there was home equity line of credit for how much?
$250,000.
And when was that?
That was in March 2019.
And so does this in effect? Is it secured by the home itself?
It is, yes.
So this is essentially the second mortgage.
Your Honor, I know this is an expert, but we're doing a lot of meetings, so I would just object and ask if we could maybe let the expert be the expert here and object.
I think it's just laying foundation, and so overruled. But if we can keep it moving, Mr. Okay. Bruce.
Do you know if this was there was any in order to obtain this? I guess is where we need to look. This in order to obtain this loan, a home equity line of credit, but a home owned by Eric Richens. How does that happen?
There's a loan application process, and in this instance, it was signed by Ms. Richens, referencing a power of attorney.
I'd like to direct your attention to State's Exhibit 123, State's Exhibit 124. Can you take 123 first?
Are you talking about the dockets?
Yes, docket? I'm sorry. Docket number 123 and
124. Okay, yes, I've got those.
Do you recognize those two documents?
Yes.
Is there the difference on the date signed by the purported author of it, I guess?
Yes.
What's the difference in the date?
Docket 123 is signed and dated 5-8-13, and docket 124 is signed dated 5-8-18.
During your investigation and examination, are you aware of whether those docket number 123 and 124 came under suspicion?
They were.
Okay. I'd like to direct your attention to State's Exhibit, or docket number 127.
I don't have a 127. I do not have a 127. Wait, never mind. It's just in
disorder. Yes,
sorry.
It is out of order. That is
That's okay.
Totally my fault. you know what that is?
I do.
What is it?
This is the expert report by Matt Throckmorton.
And those, he examined three question documents, is that right?
That's right.
And 123 and 124, are they any of those question documents?
Those are two of the three.
I'd like you to take a look at now. We have marked them as Speech Exhibit 70 for the court. I'm going to approach the witness.
Of course.
I'm not sure she has Speech Exhibit 70.
Go ahead.
Can you please just describe the title of that document for the record, number 70?
This is the Willow Court Loan Advances and Payments.
When is the first withdrawal on that home equity line of credit?
It's March 26, 2019, for $60,000.
When is the next withdrawal?
August 5th, 2019.
Could you describe the next couple of withdrawals on that?
Following $2,100 in August. There are a series of withdrawals for the next few months.
Okay. In August, is there more than one or just the one?
There are several.
Okay. Does that strike you as important for today's
purposes? Yes.
Would you explain to the court what you draw from that?
Beginning in August of 2019, this is around this time is the first property that Ms. Richens purchased after obtaining her business license. It's a home in Heber City. As far as I know, that was her first home in Utah that she flipped.
We have State Exhibit 71.
Mr. Brewster, are you offering State 70?
Yes. Yes, I will be offering State 70 and 71 as summary charts.
Okay. Is Esther any objection?
No, sir.
Okay. 70 and 71 are admitted.
Could you read for the record the title of 71?
Encumbrance and Real Property Chronology Trust Deed Summary.
So what does that help you state for the record what that first transaction was and where?
Yes. It's the 550 house. The first warranty deed involving K. Richens Realty was August 1st of 2019.
Now I'd like to portray that in another way. Did you prepare a timeline bar chart?
Yes.
Does it take much the same information, just in a different way?
Different format, yes.
Would that be helpful conveying your testimony?
Yes.
Okay. State would offer State's Exhibit 69, and we're just going to go for the first chart, which is the title.
Yes, sir. Any objection?
No, sir.
State's Exhibit 69 is admitted.
That's the whole PowerPoint? I'm sorry.
It is, but I've only laid the foundation for the very first time.
Got it.
Is that the bar chart you were just referring to?
Yes.
And so, can you just explain to the judge where, how this chart works?
Sure. I think you've seen this before. And the colors don't mean anything. They're just to distinguish one line from another. I've just got the years along the top and the months, and then going down the different properties just as some sort of an illustration to depict when properties were held at any particular time.
And then within each bar is the address of the property purchase.
Right, and so if you wanted to know what was held in June of 2021, you could draw a vertical line to see which properties were owned at that time.
Okay, so any more purchases in 2019 by K. Richards Realty?
Not that I know of. There could be others, but this is what I have been able to compile.
How about in 2020?
2020, yes, there were others.
How many purchases by K. Richards Realty of property in 2020?
I think there were just the five.
Is there one that stands out to you?
In 2020?
Yes.
Not particularly. Well, the Franson Lane one toward the end of 2020, in October of 2020. The Franson Lane property in Oakland.
I see. Let's drill down into the Franson Lane. You said, when was that?
It was acquired in October of 2020.
Is it different from the previous five, I guess, counting 2019?
Yes.
In what ways was it different?
It was a more robust project, more ambitious project in amount. You know, it was, I think she acquired it for $1.3 million, and the others had been somewhere in the neighborhood of like $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000.
Did she require money, outside money?
Yes.
To make this investment?
Yes.
What sort of investors?
They were hard money lenders.
Do you know who they were?
Yes.
Who are they?
Sierra West Capital was the primary lender, which is this, as is the case on several of her properties. And then there were other investors who contributed the funds basically for the rehab.
Was there something else different in this application that you garnered from all the financial records?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question.
That's the way I roll. Okay. Was there something else that you found in reviewing all of the documents, not just the below documents, mm-hmm. that distinguished this purchase as opposed to the ones that had gone before? Involving, all right, how about this? Do you know if CNE was involved in this project?
CNE was involved in this project.
Okay. And what did you discover about CNE's involvement?
After the acquisition of the Oakley property, the Franson Lane property, CNE, there were several checks from CNE that were deposited to the K. Richards Realty account. And they specifically have a memo on them that tie them to this property. And so over the next, between October and when this property was sold in March of 21, there are a series of checks. I think there are six or eight checks that are about $133,000 in name.
Was this property ever sold?
Yes, it was.
When?
In March of 2021.
Okay. What happened to the proceeds from that sale?
This was a property where the net proceeds were about $466,000,
which came into the K. Richens Realty account, that 6577 account. And then from that, $217,000 was paid directly to C&E. And then there were some other payments, transfers out from the account that were associated with this property as well, and left her with about, around $200,000 in net proceeds.
In your examining of all the evidence in this case, were there other things that you looked at to inform your examination that took place in October of 2020?
There were other things in October of 2020, yes.
Did you look at State Exhibit 22? Are you familiar with that document?
Yes.
Could you explain what it is?
This is an intake form from a divorce attorney describing that Eric Richens was wanting to consult with this attorney on a potential divorce, and it's dated October 8th of 2020.
In the wake of that, are you aware of any other instruments that were created out of that?
Yes, there are the notes that the attorney appeared to have handwritten during the course of that first meeting.
Were there financial arrangements made after that meeting that you're aware of?
Yes. The notes indicate that there was some new information by Mr. Richens that there was the HELOC had been taken out on the home, that as if this was new. And then from this, he set up the Eric Richens Living Trust and also a will.
Was there something dramatically different about the trust situation as
that Ms. Richens was not the beneficiary of his estate? It was to be for his children, and the trustee was going to be his sister, Katie.
So I'd like to go back to 7. The HELOC loan balance for will of by August of 2020, what was the balance?
August of 2020,
$246,931. Is there a significant, well, up until that point, how was there money being paid on that debt?
Yes, they were the interest-only payments. The minimum payments were about $900, $1,000, something like that, that were made every month.
Did something different happen in October of 2020?
Yes.
What happened?
There's the first significant payment, and it's $50,000 on October 12th.
Do you know what the source of that fund was?
Yes, Ms. Richens had sold the Cleveland Avenue house in Salt Lake, and from that she received net proceeds of about $63,000. There was a transfer, and then this $50,000 was sourced from that.
On October 12th?
Yes.
Bringing the balance to approximately what?
$196,000.
do you know whether in October she was in a financial position to just pay that $196,000?
She was not.
Let's go into 2021. I guess we've still got a timeline up. Direct your attention to timeline. Could you describe for the record a summary of what purchases, et cetera, took place in 2021?
Yes. So she acquired a property in Heber City before she got the proceeds from Branson Lane. And then after that, she acquired a number of properties throughout the summer, especially, and then ending the year acquiring three on the same day in November. And I think there may be another property that she was working on that I don't have on here, but all in all, she had about 15 properties in 2021.
So, did she go to the same lenders for all of these 15 properties?
No, there is some consistency in the lenders, but she did diversify a little bit.
Can you tell the court some of the lenders that you found that she used?
So she primarily used the Sierra West, and that's pretty consistent through here. And the those investors who would have been taking second, third, or fourth position were pretty consistent as well.
Those are like Cockerhands?
Cockerhands, Ellis, Soto, Lieb. There's a number of them.
Okay.
And then she also went to a company called Iron Ridge, a company called Boomerang. She did four projects with Boomerang.
So let's take, when did she go to Iron Ridge and when to Boomerang?
Those were in the summer of 2021.
And Iron Ridge, how would you describe what Iron Ridge is and does?
They appear to be a hard money lender. The terms are somewhat more flexible than typical hard money lenders, but the interest rates on the interest rate on that loan, I believe, is 13%. It was 13%.
And in 2021, is that high?
That would be high, yeah.
So, how did the application process go between the bank and Ironbridge?
There is an original application that is submitted. It appears to be online. I don't know that for sure, but it appears to be online. And then there was a series of emails back and forth where the person analyzing the loan or underwriting the loan is asking her to submit some additional documentation.
Okay. Can you take a look at State's Exhibit 58, please?
58?
Yes, 58. State's Exhibit. Is that what you were talking about? Some email going back and forth between Ironbridge and the defendant?
Yes.
Okay. Is there something about a bank statement in there?
Yes. It asks for personal bank statements, the most recent.
Okay. Based on your experience and training, why would they want to know that stuff?
Typically, they call that proof of funds. They want to, you know, they need to verify. In banking terms, it's KYC, know your customer. Every financial institution needs to know and verify the individual and entities that they're dealing with.
I'd like you to take a look at State's Exhibit 59, if you would. What is State's Exhibit 59?
This is a secured promissory note for the, what I call the 299 house in Heber with Iron Ridge.
And first of all, this is K. Richards Realty purchasing this, is that what it is?
That's right, and I misspoke. This is 10%. I had misstated the interest rate earlier.
And what is the amount that they're loaning?
$346,500.
When?
In, this is in July of 22. July of 21. Sorry. It's signed July 7th, 2021.
Now, did you examine a bank statement from Iron Bridge purportedly given to them by the defendant?
You mean from Iron Bridge, meaning?
It was obtained from Iron Bridge, so, but submitted to it, that it used to.
It was part of the Iron Bridge loan information that we received, yes.
Okay. Would you take a look at State's Exhibit 11, please? States Exhibit 11.
This is America First Credit Union bank account statement for May 31st, 2021 for K. Richens Realty, account number 6577.
And do you know where this was sourced from?
This was sourced from Iron Bridge, as indicated by the number on the top.
Okay. And how do you know it's K. Richens Realty?
The header on the bank account statement purports to be K. Richens Realty.
And then in the body of that statement, does it give the amount in the bank account?
Yes.
What is that?
The summary of the accounts for the three accounts that are included in this bank account statement is $210,898.61. Okay. That's the ending balance.
So I'd like to direct your attention now to State's Exhibit 12. What is State's Exhibit 12?
This is the America First bank account statement for K. Richens Realty for that same month, May of 2021, for account 6577. This is the actual statement that we received from America First Credit Union.
In what way is it the same, and in what way is it different from the State's Exhibit 11?
The header is the same, but the body, the transactions that are contained are different.
What is the total balance?
The total balance is $15,609.
All right, let's take a look at State's Exhibit 13. What is that?
This is the actual bank account statement for C&E Stone Masonry, ending in 7664. This was the document that was received directly from America First Credit Union.
And how do you know it's C&E's?
The header indicates that it's C&E's, and the transactions appear to be consistent with what C&E would be doing. And it matches the bank account statement that Iron Bridge produced, but it has the different header on it.
So let me make sure I understand this. 11 has a header from her account, K. Richens Realty, but yet the body of C&E's May 31st bank statement.
That's correct.
I'd like you to take a look at State's Exhibit 60, that's 60. I believe that's an email exchange, is that right?
That's right.
What's the subject?
Quick question.
Okay, and Is the quick question below, physically below the response? Is that?
Yes.
So what is the quick question?
This is from Mr. Kaney, I don't know how to say that, from Iron Ridge, emailing Ms. Richens asking for an explanation about her credit score, the credit cards, and referencing that bank account statement.
Okay. Is he perplexed?
Just speculation.
Sustained.
Specifically, what does he say to her?
He says when he first ran, her credit was lower than expected. There were some delinquencies on the credit cards. But he can see from the bank account statement that she provided that she's got plenty of money in the bank to cover expenses.
How does she respond to that?
Do you want me to read it?
Yes, please. Can you just read what she says to that question?
She says, "Hi, Richard. Hope you had a great 4th of July weekend." "Yes, sure. Everything is paid off now. It just probably hasn't updated. I recently learned about all of this as well, LOL, and then my husband decided to explain to me that this was his doing a while ago. We are in the process of separation for one of many reasons, but this is one of them, to keep it short and sweet, LOL. It's been crazy to say the least. I look forward to working with you guys on our first and hopefully many projects."
Okay, you said she obtained some loans from Boomerang for it, what did you say?
Yes.
I'd like you to take a look at States Exhibit 14, if you want. What is States Exhibit 14?
This is from Boomerang, but it's an America First Credit Union bank account statement for Kate Richens Realty, account 6577 for June of 2021.
And how do you know it's Kate Richens Realty?
It's just the header.
But what is the balance on that?
The balance, the ending balance is $702,831.
Take a look at States Exhibit 15 then. Now, what is that?
This is the actual statement that was obtained directly from America First Credit Union for K. Richens Realty account 6577 in June of 2021.
Yep. The header says K. Richens and Realty and 6577?
That's right.
What is the ending?
Ending balance is $15,339.
Okay, let's take a look at States Exhibit 16. What is that?
This is the actual bank account statement that was obtained directly from America First Credit Union for C&D Stone Masonry LLC, account 7664 for June of 2021.
And it presumably says C&E 7664 in the header?
In the header, yes.
What's the ending balance?
The ending balance is $702,831.
That's the same as States Exhibit 14?
The one that was issued to Boomerang, or submitted to Boomerang, yes.
Okay. So, once again, cut and paste a header for K. Richens Realty and the data, the amount of money on hand from CME.
That's correct.
Direct your attention to States Exhibit 61, if you will. Could you describe for the record what this is?
Yes, this is from Boomerang. This is a document that came directly from Boomerang. It's a kind of an internal review summary of a potential loan, kind of ahead of that would be prepared in the midst of the approval process.
And what was the property?
This is for the 75 East Midway House, I think. Yes. The smaller Midway House.
Okay. And in there, does it reference... Well, first of all, how much is the loan amount?
The loan amount on this is $454,750.
And does it talk about the defendant's liquidity?
It does, on the second page.
And what does it say about it?
Let's see. It says, under liquidity and net worth, Corey has liquidity in the amount of $702,000. She has a net worth of $2,719,000 made up of cash, securities, life insurance, retirement funds, and real estate investments.
And so that number, $702,000, is that same figure from CME that she's submitted in State's Exhibit 14?
Don't remember the exact exhibit number, but yes, that number is drawn from that bank account statement that was actually CME, not Kate Richards Realty.
Did you find any other instances where this similar type of cut and paste header with some other account was submitted to lenders?
Yes.
How many times did you find that?
I found six so far.
Including these two?
Yes.
Now, I'd like you to take a look again at the timeline.
Yes.
Okay, so these purchases in 2021, you already mentioned, 15 or more. Did any of them sell?
Yes, great number of them did, yeah.
Okay, tell us about that.
Like the Mill Creek House, for example, that was acquired in the spring. That's a home in Salt Lake County. And so there was a primary lender on that and multiple investors to who gave K. Richards Realty money for the rehab costs. And then when it was sold, most of those were paid from closing, like at the title company. Some were not. Some came out of K. Richards Realty's net proceeds.
So she's turning over property. Isn't she gaining money by doing it?
Yes.
Okay. What's happening to her debt?
That was increasing, especially she started in the middle of summer 2021. She started acquiring personal property loans that they're not secured by real property and were secured by advanced, her future receivables.
Is Greengrass holding one of those?
Yes.
Turn your attention to State's Exhibit 20. So could you, first of all, tell us what State's Exhibit 20 is?
This is a revenue purchase agreement dated... It's in September of 2021.
And could you explain the basic terms of this?
This is an agreement with K. Richards Realty and then some other companies pledging $87,000 of advance receivables for $60,000 upon execution of the agreement, and e-signed by Corey and Doreen Corey.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand this. So she's saying, I will give you $87,000 of money I haven't earned yet, but I'll pay it to you in the future if you give me $60,000 now.
Yeah, and what's represented here that it's been earned and it's going to be coming in, but it's not in yet. And so she's saying, I'll pay you back $87,000 for $60,000 now.
Okay. And what did it obligate her to pay?
$5,438 every week.
Did she pay that?
For a series of payments, yes.
Okay. How much did she pay that you're aware of?
I think she paid about $20,000. I'm not exactly sure of the amount on there, but she paid about $20,000 and then defaulted in December.
Did something happen as a result of that default?
Yes, they filed suit in New York.
Okay, the statement directs your attention to State's Exhibit 21. Could you describe for the record what State's Exhibit 21 is?
This is the summons and the verified complaint associated with that lawsuit.
And so in a lawsuit like that there's some alleged facts?
Yes.
Okay, so I direct your attention to page 5, fact number 11.
Yes.
And what is the allegation there?
That she did pay $21,752, leaving the balance of unremitted receivables of $65,248. And then there's default fees of $2,500 and attorney's fees of $19,574.
Did you find any other agreements or attempted agreements between the defendant and these type of lenders?
Yes, I found several.
Okay, what are they?
QFS Financial is one she entered into where she pledged $165,000, $167,000 for future receivables for $105,000. That was the largest one by far. Most of them are in the $20,000 to $30,000 range.
Is Blue Bridge something like that?
Blue Bridge is one. Delta Bridge Funding, Zahav, Asset Management, Crown Funding. There are over a couple of dozen. About 20 or 25.
You mentioned early on that the defendant had an account with Navy Federal.
Yes.
So Navy Federal, do you know what kind of account she had there?
At Navy Federal, she had a checking, a savings, and a credit line.
Okay. During the period of August to December of 2021, do you have any idea? Well, first of all, what was the maximum amount for that, the credit limit for that revolving line of credit?
That was $15,000.
For that period, August 2021 to December 2021, do you know what her balance was, relatively speaking?
Well, it was almost maxed out most of the time. During that specific review period, I think that's about
$13,000. Okay. Can you take a look at State's Exhibit 26, please? Is that a multi-page document?
It is.
So what are they?
These are the bank account statements for the account ending in 0060, starting in July of 21. Ending in March of 22. And for Corey Richens.
Does the statement include the balance on revolving credit?
Yes.
Okay. And throughout that time period I just mentioned, it's more or less maxed out?
Yes.
I'd like you to take a look at State's Exhibit 27. Do you know what those are?
Yes.
What are these?
These are checks from the account of Corey Richens at Navy Federal, and these checks were deposited into the account of K. Richens Realty. I believe all of these were deposited into that account, and none of them cleared.
Let's just do an exercise of one of these. Let's take a look. What's the check number on the very first one of States Exhibit 27?
Check 271.
And when is that?
The date on the check is 8/28/2021.
Can you find that transaction in States Exhibit 26, which is those statements for that appropriate time period?
Yes. It's on, the Bates number ends in 99 at the top, and it was returned on 8/31 of 21.
So that check, and how much was that check for, that particular one?
$2,100.
And all of the checks then in States Exhibit 27 are similar in that way?
That's right.
So now we're at December of 2021, the end of the year there. What is her financial status?
All in all, with all of the properties, she had acquired and sold a number of properties. She retained several as rentals. She still had loans on those properties. So at that time, it was about $4 or $4.5 million that she still owed on those. Well, the trustees, she had paid some on them, but there's that. And then with all of the personal property loans, it's hard to tell for sure, but I think somewhere around $500,000 or $600,000 she owed on those personal property loans as well.
Now you mentioned that one, for example. Green grass.
That's right.
Required her to pay $5,000 weekly?
$5,438 weekly, yes.
Were there some that were daily?
Yes.
And how many payments did she have to make in the month of December, for example?
She made about over 90 payments on debt. You know, toward the, there's a difference. There's the debt load and there's the debt service. So she owed the amounts that I stated, and then the debt service are the payments that she paid on that debt. And there are a little, well, there's over 100 that she paid payments.
So for the month of December, how much debt service is just what she paid? Not necessarily. It could be the same as debt load, but
in this instance, no, it's different.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the debt service for the month of December?
It was over $300,000.
I'd like to take a look at, this is back to States Exhibit 69. I'm going to move on to the next chart. Can you describe for the record what this next summary chart is?
This is the debt payments that she made during these months.
Once again, this is debt service, not debt load.
That's right.
Okay.
This is not the amount of debt she possessed. This is the amount of payments that she made on that debt.
Okay, and for the months of?
June of 2021 through February of 2022. And I do need to make a note that in preparing for this hearing, I've noticed that in December of 2021, I made a duplication. So we need to reduce that number by about $44,000 in December.
Okay.
It's still about
$320,000. Now, in January and February, there's go down, is that right?
That's right.
Let's once again look at the same information expressed differently. Can you describe this for the record? This is the third chart on the PowerPoint.
So this is drawn from that previous data. And so it's just showing it in a pictorial format.
It seems, after December, it seems to be going through the floor.
That's right. These are the payments that she made on the debt. She did pay off one of her lenders, one of the personal property loans. She did pay that off in January, and that was about $19,000. But mostly, because of what had happened in November and December, so many transactions had been returned and not cleared by the bank. They did not. Some of them continued to try to draw in January and February, but they were unsuccessful. And so those payments were not made.
So this doesn't depict her debt load, the amount of debt she has, but rather she's just not paying.
That's correct. At least from the accounts that I have reviewed.
Sometime around this time period, she did on another project?
Yes, she did.
Is it different than previous projects?
Are you talking about the Legacy Way project, the large house?
Oh, okay, yes.
Yes.
About that.
She, the first REPSI, which stands for Real Estate Purchase Contract, was in December of 2021, and it's a very large property on Legacy Way in Midway, and that's the property that she did end up closing in March 22.
Okay, so it begins though in December and concludes when in March?
Well, the settlement statement I've seen is dated March 4th. Some documents were signed March 4th. Some were signed on the 7th and recorded on the 8th of March.
How is this different from any of the other previous projects?
It was an unfinished house and just quite large. A very, very ambitious project. The purchase price, I believe, was $2.9
million. What was its state of repair?
It was under construction, so it didn't have much inside, down to the studs, exposed wiring, things like that.
Did she ever, that you're aware of, give an estimate to lenders about what she anticipated those costs would be to rehab it?
Yes.
What was that?
Her estimate was between $3 and $4 million to rehab that property once it was acquired.
And how did she obtain this property?
Through hard money lenders.
All borrowed then.
Pardon me?
All borrowed.
Yes, all borrowed.
Okay, I want to talk about life insurance. Have you had the opportunity to look at life insurance policies that were owned by the Richards family?
Yes.
Do you know about how many there were?
I think there were six.
This is the fourth chart. Before, from the State's Exhibit 69 PowerPoint. Can you describe what that is?
Yes, these are the life insurance policies on Eric Richin's life, and I've taken the effective date. Some of them were in 2015, 17, 18, and there's the one in 2022.
And those dates, those years, are the date of purchase?
That's right.
Are they different for, I guess, different purposes?
It appears to be, yes.
In what ways?
Well, the first one on the top is a mortgage insurance policy. So basically, it would pay down the mortgage. I think it's some odd amount, like 72.05% or something. But
okay. Was there one for business?
I believe so, and I am unclear as I sit here if that's that $1 million one or not. So I'm sorry, there is one on the business where Eric and his business partner, if one passed away, then it would benefit the other and allow the other one to buy out the business from the estate of the other.
Okay, so it doesn't go to the spouse, but rather to the other business partner.
The business partner.
To buy out the spouse.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with a company, life insurance company called TruStage?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it a some sort of business association with PenFed?
Yes.
Okay. To your knowledge, what is that relationship?
Well, TruStage is an insurance company, and they typically market their product to credit union members, all sorts of credit union members, different credit unions.
Do you know whether the defendant was a member of?
She was, yes.
How about, do you know whether Eric Richards was?
I know that he was not.
Okay. Direct your attention to State's Exhibit 62. And what is that?
These are the bank account statements for Corey Richens at PenFed Credit Union, the account 9118, for the period starting in October 2021. It's just through April of 2022.
And State's Exhibit 63. What is that?
This is a declaration of custodian of records, no records, and this is from PenFed Credit Union, stating that Eric Richens did not have any accounts at their institution.
Are you aware of an application from the defendant to TruStage for life insurance in January of 2022?
Yes.
Direct your attention to State's Exhibit 17. What is State's Exhibit 17?
This is the application for TruStage Individual Term Life Insurance, 218. And this is dated the end of January 28th or 29th of 2022.
And who's applying for what in this application?
This is for life insurance for Corey Darden Richens and for Eric Richens.
Now, is there something unusual about the information provided, contact information for each of those two applicants?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
The contact information is the P.O. box that Ms. Richens used for her business. Her email address is on there. There's no email address for Mr. Richens, and the phone number that's listed for Mr. Richens is not correct.
How is it different, do you know, off the top of your head?
Yes. It says 892, but his number starts 792.
And then it ends with the 9317?
That's correct.
And to be clear, the mailing address is the business address for K. Richens Realty for both of them?
Yes, this was pre-populated. It appears to be pre-populated this way with Corey Darden Richens and her PO box in Camas.
And when is it effective?
This policy was effective February 2nd, 2022.
Okay. I direct your attention to State's Exhibit 65. Now, before I go ahead, I'm sorry, I skipped over something. Early on, we talked about Docket 127.
Yes.
That was, if I remember correctly, that was Throckmorton's report.
That's right.
And in there, he has how many question samples?
Three questioned samples, yes.
So one and two are the power of attorney we've already addressed.
That's right.
So question number three is?
It's the signature on this life insurance policy.
Yes. And so is your understanding what?
He calls them simulated forgeries and that they're probably not Mr. Richens' signatures.
Okay, so now let's go to State's Exhibit 65, if you would. What is State's Exhibit 65?
This is a letter from True Stage Insurance to Eric Richens at that P.O. Box 759, dated February 4th, 2022.
And what is it informing Eric Richens of?
This is a welcome letter. Thank you for choosing True Stage Life Insurance. And talking about the premium would be deducted from the checking account 6577, which is the K. Richens Realty account, on February 14th for $46.50.
And that's an automatic withdrawal?
That is.
Okay. Have you examined the AFCU account for K. Richens Realty at 6577 for December, January, February, December 21, January, February, March even of 2022?
Yes.
So in 6577, is there that automatic withdrawal you were talking about?
There is, in February, yes.
Is there any other insurance premiums that are paid from 6577?
No.
Okay. Now, let's take a look at State's Exhibit 64, and I'll let you just take a look at what 64 is and 37.
What was the second number?
37. Describe for the record, what is 64?
64 is part of December. So this is an America First Credit Union bank account statement from America First Credit Union.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Richens account 2204. So this is the joint account,
okay,
where the typical household expenses were paid. And it is for December 2021, pages, and it goes through, March 1st of 2022.
So, looking at those, are there any of the insurance premiums that you've mentioned before paid out of 2204?
The payments that had previously been made, historically been made, I should say, are paid here, but not that one.
But not the new one, just all the previous ones.
That's correct.
So, have to steal my courage.
Oh, okay.
So I'm looking at, in your chart there, I guess that you find evidence of payment of those top four in your chart?
I'm not
from
sure.
From the 2204?
The payment of the premium?
Yes.
Yes.
But not the bottom one?
That's correct.
Okay. Do you know if the defendant made any claims on those insurance policies?
Yes, she did.
Particularly the true state?
Yes, she did.
Okay. How does the claim process work? How does the claim process work?
A claim is made. The insurance company would initiate a claim, give it a number, and then proceed to do their due diligence.
Okay. A couple of things. Based on your experience and training with working with insurance companies, is there a convention for naming these claims?
Yes, everyone's got a little bit different process, but in this situation, there are two different claims, and we can see from the information contained in the diary that the insurance company kept, and also the name, the number of the claim. We can see what date it was opened.
I see. Okay, so in addition, is there any? Are insurance policies treated differently if a claim is made on them near in time to when they're opened versus if you've had a policy intact for 10 years or something?
Yes. I worked on, a few dozen death investigations, and what happens, every insurance company will have a different policy, but typically, if a life insurance policy is taken out and there's a death of the insured within a certain period of time, usually it's a year or two, there's a standard death investigation that takes place. And I worked on many of those throughout my career.
Okay. I'd like you to take a look at what has been marked as States Exhibit 18. States Exhibit 18.
This is notes for claim 2204-28003. So this would be the claim opened on opened on April 28th. It's probably the third one that they assigned that day or something.
Okay. And so that, do you know which policy this is referring to?
This one is the larger of the two. This is the $250,000 policy that from 2017.
And is this what you referred to earlier as a diary?
Yes.
Okay. We have States Exhibit 67. We just, at the beginning of the day, I think, offered States Exhibit 67.
Yes.
Oh, and
I
have
those.
Yes, it's right here.
I have.
Yep. And can you identify for the record what states Exhibit 67?
Yes. This is a similar document. This is for the other claim, number 2204-22032. So this is the claim that was opened on April 22nd, 2022, and this is for, so this the first one, and this is for the $100,000 policy.
And it was opened on April 22nd, 2022.
That's right.
Let's look a little closer then. First of all, with States Exhibit 18, can you describe what this is recording and how it works with business?
This is a chronological diary, just note-taking about
the date and time of a call or a contact and just some notes. So over time, they can go back and refer to what happened and when.
At some, now this is, States Exhibit 18 is referring to the 2017 policy.
That's right.
And it was made then by April 28th, so a week after the other one.
Yes.
Okay. In there, does the defendant ask some questions, or I guess she's, is the insurance company asking the defendant some questions about the case?
Yes.
Do they want to know about fentanyl?
Yes, they needed the final death certificate showing the cause of death, and then they need to know if the fentanyl was prescribed.
And does the defendant respond to that?
She does. Toward the bottom, she said the fentanyl was not prescribed, so she can't give any information about it. She also added that she don't have any idea how did her husband got that. Just for the record, that's what it says. That's not my grammar.
Let's turn to States Exhibit 67. Now, to be clear, this is first in time request.
Yes, it is.
And the policy that she opened, and I believe was effective, you said
February 2nd. Mm-hmm. Yes.
At some point, I think in July of 2022, is there a conversation between the defendant and the insurance company about what's taking so long?
Yes. This would be, well, there are several conversations in July. They're talking about the needing the medical records from the medical facility. And then finally in August, that they say, she called to know the status of the claim, and then they said that they had received the medical records from the clinic.
Okay. So they finally get them when? The medical records?
That's, according to this, is 8/15/22.
In the, see the entry 8/22, the bottom of page 2?
Yes.
Are they talking about the medical records there at that last?
It looks like, yes.
And did they receive them on what day?
Well, this is when they received the invoice.
Oh, it's the invoice, so. All right, so do they describe what is important to them as far as this investigation in at least one of those 822 entries?
Yes. It looks like they received the records on 8/2 and 8/11. I don't know if that matters. Okay, yes, they received the 36 pages of records on 8/11. And then there's substance use other than prescribed. It's marijuana once or twice a year, and no concerns about substance abuse in the household.
At a moment,
yes.
That's all the questions I have.
Who's doing the questions? Ms. Nestor, level with me. How much time do you think you have with Ms. Harrington?
30 minutes.
Okay. Do you have a possible question?
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.